Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's episode, we are traveling to the Okanagan Valley to talk about the wonderful wines being made up in Canada. On today's pod, I speak with Graham Norden and Spencer Kelly of Checkmate Winery. We talk about the history of the region and its potential for the future. I want to remind everybody that if you have SOM TV, you can watch this episode right now on SOMTV.com. And also, there's still a chance to get your tickets for the New York City release of Cup of Salvation. We open up on 12/7. You can get your tickets right now at somfilms.com. Without further ado, let's talk Canada, the Okanagan Valley, and the potential for this wonderful region. Graham and Spencer, I don't mean to put a lot of pressure on you guys here, but you're here to finally and completely represent the entire Okanagan Valley and all of Canada. How do you feel about about that responsibility from a winemaking and a wine standpoint on the SOM TV pod? You guys feel ready?
Couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, right.
we'll do our best.
Yeah, Canada, your whole careers have been leading up to representing Canada on the SOM TV podcast now. The two of you are in a really interesting position for me because we don't talk enough about Canadian wine, especially in the United States. Obviously, countries that produce their own wine tend to drink their wine, and there's a lot of stuff that is, you know, doesn't get cycled through. But I can say that in the last 10 years, maybe 15 of me being in this profession, the wine from Canada has been staggeringly good. It's just gotten better and better and better. And come to find out, it always has been. It's just been, I have not been able to get it. And so I want to start really fast with, where are you guys making wine right now? Let's talk about the specific location.
For sure. So we are in the west coast of Canada, in British Columbia. You know, within British Columbia, there's actually 9 GIs that are designated in making wine throughout the province. Where Spencer and I are here in the heart of that in the Okanagan Valley. So the Okanagan Valley represents about 86% of the total wine production across British Columbia. And I would say one of the most unique wine growing regions, not just in North America, but around the world. When you look at the diversity of soils, the climatic influences, the fact that this area is relatively young in terms of grape growing, but we have a history of agriculture, of orchard fruits, going even before that, you know, there's very few regions around the world that were formed by first volcanic activity and then multiple glacial ages. And the fact that 5 to 6 massive glaciers would have worked their way down and carved out this valley. And that up until as recently as 12,000 years ago, we would have all been under a sheet of ice. And then eventually that ice melted and formed these glaciers that it got stuck in a glacial dam, and where Spencer and I are all would have been underwater. And eventually that dam burst and flooded not just the South Okanagan, but into Washington State and into Oregon. It was the most significant flooding event in North American's history. So the fact that we've got all these really unique pockets of soil, of slopes, and then you factor that in that the south end of this valley has a desert climate, which is unique to Canada, that it's like having, you know, all these unique factors going into it that give us the opportunity to make really exceptional wine in a very small area.
Right. Well, so you're talking about the Missoula floods, right? The giant bursting of, which is megatons of water. I mean, it is one of the largest events that has ever happened on Earth, let alone in North America. So why would those floods have made this such a great place to grow wine? How does that work?
Well, what it does is
this is real nerd stuff here. It's great.
Well, I think one of the things that we all love in the world of wine is great wine tasting like where it comes from, of having a sense of place. And this place has such unique diversity within it. It's this 200 kilometer or 120 mile stretch of valley, but it's very unique from north to south because of these different soil deposits that we've got in the north end of the valley to the south end that was, you know, flooded, and then having this unique desert climate in the south, which is very different than the north. I mean, there's not many regions around the world that within the same region you can grow Pinot Noir and aromatic whites in one section, and then ripen Bordeaux and Rhone varieties in another, all within a 90-minute drive of each other. So I think to answer your question about why that flooding matters, it's because it allows us to be able to craft wines of uniqueness of distinction and allow us to really start to tell a story of that there's incredible grape growing, but also diversity within this area that you, when you have a bottle of wine from the Black Sage bench, it will taste different than the Golden Mile bench, or Pinot Noir from East Kelowna has a unique character that you don't find in West Kelowna. So I think that's the fun thing is we have all worked in wine and studied about wine. You really get into the geekiness of the soil and the site and what makes them different. I think we absolutely have that here in what is still a very new world region.
So Spencer, I want to ask you, when you can plant anything, you know, basically you have the soil, which so many places would kill to have, and you have the climate. Is it easy to just go, all right, we'll grow everything? Or how do you find the right grapes when you can practically grow anything? How do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's a great point, a great question, and really relevant to the Okanagan, because that was the approach of a vegetable garden, basically planting a little bit of everything and let's see. And also because producers were satisfying the local demand for the most part. So people want some diversity in the wines they buy. And if you're selling mostly within your area, you try to meet all those needs. I think as we look to export more and get on a world stage, we need to focus on fewer varieties that we can do at a high level. And we're at the point now where we've had enough time. We've got varieties that were planted in, Vitis vinifera varieties from mostly the 80s, but at Checkmate, we've got Chardonnay from the 70s. That's enough time to understand what really works and what we could really focus in on.
Yeah. Are there, and we'll get to Checkmate because I mean, what you guys are doing, what your winery's doing, what your whole team's doing is really highly elevated. And I want to get to how you stand out being from the Okanagan. And I mean, wine speaks for itself, but you still have to get it in front of people. And we'll talk about that stuff. But the wines you guys are making, I'm drinking one right now. And if you're watching this, you can see me drink at 11 a.m. What I want to ask is when you're sort of, because obviously you weren't around in the 70s, you were dealt these vines or you chose these vines. Do you start thinking after a little while, I wish they had planted more Cab Franc, I wish they had planted this? Or do you take the vines and you go, now I understand how to make Chardonnay and this was the right decision? Because I'm just so fascinated with the early naissance of a region like the Okanagan, where you can trace it back to the 60s or 70s, which is still, the people who did it might still be alive. So it's really fascinating to me. What have you learned from working with the vines over time in the Okanagan? Are you guys growing the right stuff?
I think for the most part, yes, but I think we could focus even more so on what really does well. And that's the direction we need to go.
What does grow well? So let's start there. If I was going to say, what does the Okanagan do well?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, and to Graham's earlier point, it is diverse. So I would say in the north part of the Okanagan, for red varieties, Pinot Noir does very well. For whites, it could be certainly Riesling and then a cooler Chablis style, let's say, version of Chardonnay. And then in the southern Okanagan, it's a fair bit warmer with leaner soils. I would say Merlot, Cabernet Franc for red varieties have proven to do very well. And then Chardonnay, which can handle, a warmer growing season in more of a richer style.
So the oldest vines you guys kind of work with go back to the 70s, is that right?
Yes, we have Chardonnay from the 70s.
That's incredible. Yeah. That really is. The region itself, are we talking 60s, 50s, 60s, like the oldest?
It's quite rare to have Vitis vinifera varieties actually from the 70s, because before the 80s, there was a lot of hybrids or Lambrusca. So there was a government-sponsored pullout that happened in the 80s. And so it is quite rare actually to find Vitis vinifera before the 1980s. So really, that's when our industry kind of get started.
And what was the wine like that they were producing? Was this a much simple, I mean, what were they making prior to this push? I mean, you guys are making world-class wines. So for me to be able to watch a region or drink a region that has figured it out recently, I mean, we're always talking about France or we're talking about Italy, and they may have done a super Tuscan, in the 1960s, but those grapes and vines have been there for 500, 600, 700 years. So what were they making when they were doing these hybrids? And why hybrids? If you're able to grow Vitis vinifera, why would they even do that?
I think at the time they didn't know that they could grow Vitis vinifera, and it took some courage to make that leap. As far as the wines, I really don't know what those wines would have been like in the early days.
They couldn't have been great though if they tore them all out.
I don't think it would have been very inspiring, nor I don't think we would have been having this conversation at that time.
Yeah,
sure.
On the quality of the wines.
Right, right, right. Well, I don't, you know, it's easy to say. I don't know there was a lot of great wine being produced really almost anywhere in North America. It's not that there wasn't, but it's not that there was a lot of it. Yeah. So you guys are not alone. Sure. I mean, so, okay, let's talk about Checkmate and this winery that you started. What was the reason to start this winery?
So the winery started in 2013, and the reason was really the acquisition of these old vineyards of Chardonnay that had been planted in the mid-70s. So we were able to acquire the vineyards, and that was really what, you know, just kickstarted this brand. It's basically based off of the vision and the courage that these people had to plant this Chardonnay, and for us trying to take that forward and make the best representation of it as wine.
Have you guys ever done any, I'm always curious, have you guys ever done any like blind tastings against wines from other parts of the world? Because are there people that are like, oh, this is an Okanagan, you know? Mm. Because I mean, this can drink against, you know, the Napas, the French. I mean, this is that kind of quality. I'm curious, what do people say when they taste your wines? Do they know where it's from? Is there any kind of like, this goes right back to Canada, or do they not know where to place it?
Yeah, I can speak to a little bit of that. We were actually, funny enough, I was just spending the last week in London sharing the wines there. And so to your point, Jason, I don't think the first place that any of us in the world of wine go to is, oh, that's classically the Okanagan. But I think one of the consistent themes is around purity of fruit, vibrancy, freshness, and that kind of hallmark natural acidity that runs through the wines. And I think that's true both of white and red varieties. And so I think then that interest goes, well, oh my gosh, this is something that is incredibly vibrant, really fresh, incredible purity of fruit. Where is it from? And then that's when you can really start to have this conversation about the valley and what makes it unique and hot days and cool nights and all those kind of things. But I think, you know, you mentioned something interesting before just about, you know, France and Italy and still figuring, and you know, what they would have been like in the 60s, 70s and 80s, and certainly still figuring it out on our side. But I think, you know, one of the unique things about working here in the Valley today is that you're not part of this multi-generational hundreds of years of history and tradition that you're kind of bound to. There's a real sense of opportunity, of innovation, of creativity, and knowing that you've got this incredibly beautiful, pure place to be able to grow and make wine, it really feels like for us that are here that we're part of writing the history of this right now, which is really exciting.
Yeah, it really is. I find it to be maybe even more interesting than some of the great old wine regions, are the ones that are putting the blocks together. But like I have to reiterate, like the wine I'm drinking is as good as those. It's as good as any wine. So like, it's not, I'm more just talking about this because I think many Americans, I am one, that my perception of Canadian wine was ice wine, maybe prior to maybe about 8, 12 years ago. And then somebody puts a glass in front of you and they say, what do you think this is? And you taste it and you go, I think this could be French. I think it could be. And then you start thinking, I don't know. You're obviously trying to trick me. And then somebody goes, no, this is from Canada. It's from Western Canada. And you look at it and you go, really? And then you want to drink more and you keep drinking more and more. And you realize it's kind of that great thing about wine where you realize you know nothing often, you know, no matter how much you know, you're tall. And so to watch a region that is still discovering, but also making wine at this level is pretty miraculous. It's really, really incredible. So before we get deeper into your actual winemaking style and your stories, how do you stand out? You know, how do you get your wine out on a stage where people know? And is there pressure to represent the whole valley with your wine?
Yeah, I think there is a little bit. I think there's, I wouldn't call it pressure necessarily, Jason. I think there's responsibility. to represent the wine because of everything that we've just talked about, that there's incredible history here. There is exceptional quality being made that I think we feel very proud of that and also obligated to help and be a part of it. And it's not just us. I mean, there's a number of other producers as well, but I think there's a select few that really feel the opportunity to champion what's happening here and to take the wines around the world to the United States, to the United Kingdom, to other places in Europe, to be able to say that this is what we feel is really the next great story in the world of wine. And one can't build an international reputation unless there is some international distribution. We have to be boots on the ground and take the wine to shows and be in top restaurants and taste with, you know, key people in the trade and in the media. And that's the way we're going to do it, not by maps and by photos. Certainly, it's incredibly beautiful. You know, oftentimes I describe it as my family in the U.S. of it's like Napa Valley meets Lake Tahoe. So it's really beautiful.
Whenever we often do our most beautiful regions, like we talk about where's the most beautiful place to go. And Okanagan's always on my list.
Yeah.
And people are like, Okanagan, huh? And I'm like, it is just so stunning up there. Tahoe meets Napa is a really good call. I mean,
and it ties it right in. And so that's enough to, I think, generate interest. You go, oh my gosh, here's one of the most beautiful places in the world that's making wine. I've never heard of the Oka something Valley. And but then I think the hook is really to get the wine in the glass, because ultimately the wine needs to tell the story. And that's where I know for both Spencer and I and the work that we do taking the wines around the world is that we're so proud about the quality that's in the bottle.
Makes a lot of sense. What are the big challenges growing wine or growing grapes and then making wine up there? Every region has it. What are your big challenges up there?
So for us, obviously, we have winters, so we get a real there is a cold period, and we can have some damage to vines when winters get very cold. So that's a big one. And then after that, it's a shorter growing season. And we have to be very on time, very organized to get all the work done in the vineyard that you need to do in less time to make wines.
And by shorter, what do you mean? So like Napa or something?
Yeah, bud break would be a month later than it is in Napa typically.
Right.
And then we also have a fall where you can have frost a little earlier. So there's some years that we'll get a frost mid-October. So you need to get fruit ripe by early October if you want to, you know, get it harvested before a potential frost.
So how do you do that? I mean, when you're actually in the winery, there's a lot of things you can do to maneuver wine. I mean, that's the winemaking process, but how do you do that in the vineyard? How do you go over there and do you play the right music for the grapes? I mean, how do you get them to ripen? I will say that the one thing I have to say, you guys mentioned the acid, and it is one of my real big problems with a lot of great wines is that they're just missing the acid component. They don't have it. The acid in this wine is phenomenal. I mean, it balances the wine so well, and I don't think you could describe this wine without talking about how well integrated the acid is. And normally people are saying that about tannins or oak, but in this case, the acid is phenomenally integrated into the wine. So clearly, I imagine this has to do with what you're talking about with the harvest, but the acid's great. So how do you get grapes to ripen faster?
Well, it's about managing yields from the very beginning. So it's pruning and leaving the right amount of buds so that you're not pushing too much of a large canopy. It's not leaving too many shoots that you then have to thin fruit later. So it's just being ahead is really key. And keeping the yields moderate is a big part of that. And then also just the vineyards we work with are well located. They have good exposure. And if we keep yields in check, keep the canopies balanced, we can do it every year. It's just you have to be on time.
And which grapes are the most tricky in regards to this? Because, God, you guys, I mean, growing Pinot and growing, you know, something that's late ripening like Cab or whatever. I mean, I can only imagine the stress with that. And what end of the spectrum, what are the more tricky grapes to deal with? I mean, it's not like you're growing the grapes up in the Yukon or, you know, Saskatchewan, like, you know, at the very top. But what are the ones that you're like, if I could just from a standpoint of the way it listens to the weather, this would be the grape. And this is the one that is the trickiest. I'm always just curious.
That's a good question. And I'm not sure I have the answer yet. I'm still, you know, I'm from the Okanagan, but I'm sure every
year gives you a different challenge too. So it's kind of like a, you know, it's more of just a, what do you like working with?
Yeah.
Which
I mean,
one gives you that?
As a vine, certainly if you ask viticulturists, I think they would tell you Cabernet Franc is fantastic in terms of how it grows. You know, it's very upright. It's like at attention. Now the challenge with it is on the later side for what we can ripen every year. So that's the challenge. So you really have to manage the yields and make sure there's enough light in the canopy. And yeah, so that's one there where there, it's a big challenge, but it's a big reward as well.
What was your story in getting into wine? I just out of curiosity, where did you start to become a winemaker? And why did you decide? So you're from the Okanagan. You are born and raised.
Yes.
So what made you stay there? Let's talk a little bit about your story. When I'm glad you stayed, well, but I'm curious as to why.
So I've actually didn't stay. I've been the last 10 years in Napa Valley. So I'm returning. I've returned in January. But to back up a little bit, I grew up here grew up in the 80s and 90s. So the industry was a little less developed, let's say, at that time. But it was around. And I actually got interested in, I was always interested in food and cooking early on. And so I worked in restaurants and I went to university for food science. And I thought that's what I'd like to do. I didn't really know in what capacity. But while studying, I took a wine science class, which was really a wine appreciation class, and had, you know, like I think a lot of people that first aromatic white, which was in my case a Riesling, and I was just like, whoa, like what is this? And I basically just went down the rabbit hole after that. And because I had grown up in a, albeit a fledgling region, a wine region, it didn't seem crazy that I could, you know, could do it, that I could become a winemaker. So I finished my studies in food science and worked for a couple of years in the Okanagan, but wanted to do a winemaking degree. And that's when I went down to California, studied at Fresno State.
Then
from Fresno, I went up to the Napa Valley and was there for 10 years.
Which wineries were you at in Napa?
So I worked, my first internship was at Colgan Cellars. And,
okay,
and
all right.
And I did also some a viticulture position at Stagecoach Vineyards. I worked at internship at CV Vineyards. And
you were sort of all over. Yeah, this is great. These are great wineries, though.
Yes. And then back to Colgan for a more of a permanent position with the winemaking team there. And then from there, I went and I joined Araujo, which is now Isley Vineyard. And that's where I was the last 8 years, which was a really cool, really great company. It's part of a French wine group. And we were the one winery outside of France. So through that, I was had good exposure to the other winemakers in the team in France and got to visit Europe a little more often. And that was really formative for me to be part of that group.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I mean, it's actually so great that you were able to go back to the Okanagan. I mean, did you have, when you got there, did you have grand plans with, all right, that's it, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z when I got here? Or was it?
Well, I was really attracted by what has been going on at Checkmate. So how focused this mm-hmm. winery is. And we just do Chardonnay and Merlot, and we are working with vines that are, you know, 30 to 50 years old. So really in their prime, mature and focused and trying to get them more on the world stage as well. Because I feel like that's where they belong to be. Like we've been talking about, people just need to try the wines. And I think oftentimes they're really blown away by the level they're at.
Yeah.
And so there's that element, and then just, yeah, trying to take some of the things I've learned from my past experience and bring that back here.
Phenomenal. So I'm drinking the Merlot right now, and you know, Merlot, it gets a bad rap for a lot of dumb reasons, mm-hmm. but the one thing that it normally doesn't get is a lot of people talking about tannins and acid.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes Merlot, even in a very good state, is still, you know, it's a fruit forward type
for
wine,
sure.
Even at the highest level. I will say though, I don't think I would call this Merlot. If you guys put this in my glass and I did not know what it was, I would know it was really well made. But there's tannin and acid in this wine.
Yeah.
That is not, it's not that it's not characteristic. It's just that it's sort of maybe, in my personal opinion, it's done better. I have to say it's really, really well. Like, because you kind of get all these components that in a lot of pure Merlots, and I assume this is 100% Merlot.
There is a little Petit Verdot in there.
Okay, a little bit of Petit Verdot. But I mean, in a lot of cases, a wine like this is not, it just doesn't have the body. You know, it kind of goes one direction, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. Why did you settle on Chardonnay and Merlot for the checkmate?
So to continue what we're saying on Merlot, it's really true. I think the conditions here, you know, Merlot tends to be generally a little soft, thought of as kind of a softer wine, right?
And it often is. It often, I mean, you know, the stereotype, it comes from a real place. Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. But with the soils that we have here, which are, you know, sandy and the long days and, you know, high amount of UV light that the fruit sees, the fruit comes in really structured. So there's a lot of tannin in our Merlots. And also we don't tend to have the really extreme heat leading up to harvest. Like we have hot summers, but because our season is shifted a little further back, it doesn't affect the polyphenol content as much as, let's say, in Napa Valley, where you can have a heat wave Labor Day and the fruit is just about ready and you start to lose some polyphenols as a result. So I would just say the fruit naturally just has a high content of tannins. And then you know, we're harvesting with good acidity levels. So it's, let's say, not what people would expect from a stereotypical Merlot. The wines just have more structure. And then for Chardonnay, you know, the fact that we have some older vines and the fruit is just really pristine, really, really vibrant, gives us the confidence that it's a variety we need to continue with and pursue and focus on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, the two, you know, the Chardonnay having such old, you know, established vines is, I don't think people talk about it enough with Chardonnay, how great it can be with old vines. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes, at least this is the case I find in the United States, that Chardonnay is not thought of as an old vine type of situation. Mm-hmm. You guys are truly dealing with real old vine Chardonnay, which I've had, I already drank the bottle that I have of your Chardonnay, so it's gone. Or I would. But
it was good.
It is. It was very good. It was actually very good. In fact, I opened it with my wife and some others that are in the company, and I was like, "All right, we'll just taste this," and then we drank the whole bottle, and I was like, "Oops!" It was like 2 seconds. It was gone. So that's a good sign. Yeah. That's what you want out of a wine. You want somebody to forget they're supposed to be doing it for research, and they just like enjoyed it. That's what happened with us and your Chardonnay. What do you two, and maybe Graham, you can answer this, what do you see as the future of, do you want to expand into more for Checkmate besides just these? Do you feel like this is where you want to stay wine-wise?
I think we're in a great spot for Checkmate right now, Jason. I think the future is bringing the wines to the world and having Checkmate really help tell the story of the Okanagan Valley and put this region on the world wine map. I think that's the future. I think it's continuing to do the job that our viticulture team is doing, that Spencer's doing in the winery, of really helping carry on these exceptional vines and make really truly pure, fresh, vibrant wines that have a great sense of place, that are really well made, that can help, you know, for do exactly what we're talking about today, of make people go, wow, I had no idea that wines this could be coming from the Okanagan Valley in Canada. I think that's the opportunity that we have with Checkmate. So continue to do what we're doing, but just make sure that we share the wines a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm excited to be helping to be at the front of you guys doing this, because I know you're about to start a big push and letting everybody know. This wine does not need a caveat. It doesn't need to be like, oh, it's good for this region. This wine is excellent. just that's it, full stop. But it is for wine geeks, I consider myself one. It is so fun to taste a wine and know it's from a place that is still building, but also has their stuff figured out. That's a rare situation. I won't name names on some regions that are doing that wrong right now, but you guys definitely are not. You know, I like the sense of place idea and food. Is there any food culture up there that you would eat with this? That's what would you have with your, we'll start with the Merlot, but what would you eat? Something hopefully local that you guys enjoy up there.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always that, we've all learned it, of what grows together goes together.
Sure.
Connection with food and wine. And, you know, I think that, going back to that natural acidity and tannin structure, that there's a lot of versatility in Checkmate Merlot. So certainly I think about, you know, game meats, I should say, but things that are roasted, braised, stewed, those kind of things. But even, you know, venison, lamb, I think you've got a lot of opportunity to pair even something like, you know, roast chicken with, you know, orchard cherries that are from the Okanagan, maybe cook down a little bit of red wine and sage and thyme, that type of a thing. And then, you know, from a Chardonnay perspective, again, just knowing that we've got such vibrancy and freshness, but structure. You know, I think about where we are, you know, here in British Columbia, where you are in California, Jason, but I think about that West Coast of like things coming from the sea. So thinking about like whitefish, halibut, cod, you know, one of the quintessential fishes here, in British Columbia, that we get a lot of incredible salmon here. But then also mussels and oysters and scallops and those types of things. So I lean towards that way, but then I could even go the same route with chicken, but then just think about the preparation of like, okay, well now I want to roast it with like lemon and butter and a little bit more of like a Herb de Provence kind of a deal. So I think there's a lot, the fact that we're having a conversation about all these different things that we want to eat with it usually makes me think like, okay, we've got a good wine here.
I'm really hungry. Now I'm really hungry. It's good.
Yeah.
It is very good. Well, you don't need me to tell you this, but you should be very proud of these wines. They're great. And I'm ecstatic that people here in the United States can finally get it. You know, you guys are able to ship from your website to a lot. That's fantastic stuff. And if you're in Canada and you're not already drinking this, shame on you, because it is tremendous wine and you should be. All right, you two. It's really, really a pleasure. I want to thank you both for being on. I want to tell everybody to make sure you try Checkmate Wines up in the Okanagan. And go visit this wine region. You will be blown away by how gorgeous it is. Graham and Spencer will make you venison and halibut. So it'll be great.
Deal.
All right, boys.
Thanks, Jason.
Be safe.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you love this podcast, do not forget to give us a great review wherever you listen to your pods. I want to thank John Adams for producing this episode. And I want to say, do not forget about Canada. They make some incredible wines. And I would definitely recommend picking up the wines from Checkmate Winery. They're fantastic. Go to somtv.com to watch this episode and tons of other educational and entertaining content. And get those tickets for Cup of Salvation. We open up in New York City on the 7th of December. And tickets are for sale right now at somfilms.com. All right, everybody, be safe. And we'll talk soon.